Welcome to part two of our interview with Kim Johnson about the Rockford haunting. Let's talk a little bit more about this connection that might be going on with Willie Maxwell and what went on in the 1970s at the home. What did you uncover there in your research?
Okay, so back in 2015, Harper Lee was getting ready to release her second book, which was a huge big deal nationally and internationally.
Yep.
So everybody was writing articles and talking about her new book coming out and what's it going to be about. Well, there was an article written in the New Yorker, I believe, that was curious about. Well, Harper Lee was supposedly writing a different book, you know, back in the 1980s, you know, whatever happened to the book called The Reverend that she was working on. And it was based on this preacher, Willie Maxwell, that was from the Alexander City area. He was a traveling preacher, and he lived in the area, and he was also known for, you know, performing voodoo rituals at times. And there's folklore that says that, you know, he would hang chickens in his yard to ward off evil spirits and use their blood to paint his doorstep so nothing negative could come his way. And people would tell us that they had memories of driving by his house and seeing these chickens hanging from his trees, and how it always kind of spooked them, and it was eerie to see that. But, you know, when we came across that article in the New Yorker talking about this voodoo preacher from, you know, Rockford, Alabama, and how he was suspected of possibly killing five of his family members back in the 1970s, we thought, oh my gosh, you know, maybe there's some kind of link, you know, maybe there's something to this. That really triggered our research and triggered us to dig deeper to see if there was some kind of connection. And I had no idea if there would be one, but we found out that there was, and that he had lived in the house next door to where Jenny and Hunter had lived and experienced their terrible haunting. And not only that, you know, the Willie Maxwell had been buried in the cemetery that was practically across the street from their house at the Peace and Goodwill Cemetery. And as I started going through the records of the cemetery, I learned that, you know, not only was the voodoo preacher buried there, but so were four of his supposed victims. Two wives were supposed victims, a nephew, and his own brother were all considered victims of his, you know, devious schemes. And so and then the fifth victim was and his last victim was a 15-year-old girl, his stepdaughter. She was found murdered on the side of the road not too far from you know, this house in Rockford, and not too far from where the Reverend lived. You know, the girl who was murdered, she it was staged to look like she had had a flat tire and the car had fallen on her and killed her that way. But it was later determined by an autopsy that she was already dead when she had been placed underneath the rim of the tire of the car. So, and every time one of these family members would die, Willie Maxwell would get a check from the insurance companies. And so, you know, it was benefiting him, and he just continued to get away with it. And it boggles my mind that he just kept getting away with it. And then also he kept getting bolder and, with his actions, and so much so that he would take the life of his own stepdaughter. So, it's very crazy.
A lot of death and negativity and yeah, exactly, craziness going on right there, all in the same area of this home. Is that the connection that's made there? Is that the connection of just the proximity to the home of why maybe some of these dark energies or forces are alive today or were alive and tormenting? Is that how it all kind of relates?
Yes, that's as far as we could find out. That is the connection that we think was causing this home to have so much negative activity in it. We reached out to the daughter of the house that Jenny, the owner of the house that Jenny and Hunter had lived in. Her parents, one had passed away and one, her memory was gone. So we really wanted to ask the homeowners if they had any recollection of Willie Maxwell, since he had been their neighbor, and, had they seen anything suspicious, because a lot of these deaths that were happening right near the home on these little country roads. And, people were so afraid of the Reverend Maxwell that, it's not unfathomable to think that they would just turn a blind eye if they saw him, doing something like, staging a murder scene to look like an accident. They might have just looked the other way because they didn't want to be cursed or they didn't want to be next.
Yeah.
So, people were so afraid of the Reverend that we were told that if they saw him coming down the sidewalk in town, they would cross the street so they wouldn't have to look him in the eye, because people really believed that if he looked you in the eye, he would own your soul. And so, and there was all these rumors about him practicing voodoo in the basement of his home, and he would keep jars of blood down there. And, other people believe that there were other victims. We were even told a story that we didn't share in the book because we couldn't verify it, but some young ladies came to us and said that their aunt had actually been taken, kidnapped by Willie Maxwell at one point. And he took her into this basement of the home and he was draining her blood into a jar. And her sister had seen her get kidnapped. She ran to get her dad, and they saved her at the last minute, from the Reverend. But she could have been the next victim. But we heard all kinds of really strange stories like that. And classmates of the stepdaughter, his last supposed victim, they came forward and told us that, the stepdaughter was really afraid of her stepdad, Willie Maxwell, and that he had, one day she had come home and found a black cat on the kitchen table that had been stabbed to death with a fork. And it was meant for her to find, just to threaten her, scare her in some way. And she would come to school and tell her classmates these stories. And the night that she died, she actually was running away from her house. She really did, according to the newspapers, her mother said she just didn't want to live there anymore. She just wanted to go live with her aunt in another city. And so she stole the car. And she was driving back to her aunt's house that night, supposedly, but she didn't make it very far because they found her, dead, just not even a half mile from their house later that evening. But, we heard all kinds of strange stories about his voodoo practices and this alternate side of him that many believe to be true. Because there is this, this other side of him that people talk about as well, about him being very soft-spoken and being a very, you know, a very good man. And, you know, they, you know, other people dismiss this whole voodoo thing as well. But I don't know. I don't know. I just try to leave it up to the reader to decide what they think.
How did things end with the house, with your investigating of the house? Obviously, they had moved on and moved away. Was there any resolution to it? Did it still linger? What was the state of the home as you left it?
I would really like to know, but we blessed the house. The two brothers that were in the house that were causing all the trouble, the medium took care of them. He didn't banish them, but he brought their mother, of all things, to come and keep an eye on them and make sure that they didn't cause any more trouble for anyone else. And now Blaine did go by just a few weeks ago, actually, and just stood in the yard. He didn't go inside because we don't know who lives there now, but he just stood in the yard for a few minutes just to get a feel for what spirits were still there. And he assured me that the negativity was gone, that, you know, the negative spirits aren't causing trouble. The, you know, the good spirits that were allowed to stay have stayed, and, you know, they're doing fine. So, you know, Blaine has never, you know, told me wrong. I mean, everything that he's ever told me, you know, I've come to just believe him, because there's so many things that I've been able to validate that he would have no idea. Like, there's no way he could know. You know, I take his word for it. And I truly believe that, you know, what he's saying is correct. And I definitely hope so for anyone that, you know, lives there or will live there, that it will be peaceful for them.
That's going to wrap up our interview with Kim Johnson about the Rockford haunting. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.